welcome to a special episode of Leaves.
So this is episode 11, the meal, which is in front of us now, which you'll see on our Instagram page, is made, I would say, entirely by me. Rachel made a couple of pointers and
I made the dressing. Some
seeds on.
I grated a whole lemon, loaded ginger, mixed it all together, made sure everything didn't burn, turned over the aubergine to make sure they cooked, and presented it. So yeah, so not very, very much really, well. Yeah.
This episode is entirely on veganism. The audience have gone back to us and said that they think Rachel doesn't have much of an input, it's all on books. Well, you know, all true. So books won't even be mentioned.
Well, funny you should say that.
Okay, well, wait and see.
Yeah.
They might crop up. So, any comments?
Well, I'm excited to see how this tastes. Maybe we should taste it now. Let the listeners know what we think of our... Well, maybe you can explain what it actually is.
So it's grilled aubergine.
It's not. Try again.
Okay, so it's oven-cooked aubergine.
Yep.
With tofu on a base of... rice with
no,
leaf.
It's not rice.
On a base of wheat.
Vulgar wheat.
Yeah, wheat. With the gluten removed.
Not true.
Did I mention with tofu? So it's tofu with the aubergine.
Yeah,
and then on top of that, there is some kind of leaf.
What was the leaf called?
I can't remember.
It's about a season, something to do with a season.
Spring leaf.
Spring green.
Spring green. Yeah. On top of that, there are sesame streets. Sesame streets mixed up with chili oil and ginger and not the expensive oil we can afford, but vegetable oil.
Yeah, and a whole lemon. And like a whole lemon. The rind and also the juice.
Yeah.
But Sainsbury's didn't have any lime. Sesame seeds, yeah, we said. And also, what's the aubergine and the tofu kind of coated in? It's the key ingredient, the key flavour.
Miso.
Miso, exactly. And where did you follow the recipe from? What was the book?
I can't remember.
It was from The Green Roasting Tin, which is a favourite.
A sponsor of ours.
In ethos, if not in money.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right, ready to taste? Aubergine, I can... It's not rice.
Okay, wheat.
And I've got aubergine as well. Oh, it's really good. What are your thoughts? And we'll be back to discuss veganism. Oh, wait a second. John's just dropped about... a third of his plate on the table. A good deal of vulgar wheat, some tofu. Anyway, we'll be back to discuss how John got on eating this and veganism in a bit. Welcome back. How was dinner, in your opinion, John?
I think it was good. You made a mess, but...
John is speaking. I had to give John an extra plate because there was so much vulgar wheat all over the table. I don't think I've spilt anything, actually. Oh, no, one piece.
Yeah, one piece in a little wheat.
Yeah,
sorry. Okay, so we're even. What do you think about my cooking?
So, I thought that you followed the recipe really well, yeah. Actually, like, there were things that maybe the recipe didn't say that, you know, like, for example, turning over the aubergines to make them cook quickly, like, I've only known that because I've cooked aubergines loads. So, like, you followed the recipe super well. You did everything it said. There was a bit of a potential tofu issue, wasn't there?
Yeah, so it cuts into 1.5 centimetre slices, but...
yeah.
Don't say how thick, wide, long,
deep. So we nearly had almost tofu crumbs.
Yeah, well, I was thinking them into little 1.5 centimetre cubes, but...
the other thing the recipe said was to essentially roast... leaves of spring 20 minutes, which is too long. So, yeah. But we didn't.
Cooking, not 5 minutes preparation. 10 minute cooking. I don't know, if you're used to cooking, it might.
Yeah, it did take you quite a long time, didn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. The best approach, really, going forward for you vegan cooking wise. Maybe it's like getting like pre-chopped packs of things. Like a pre-chopped pack of roasted vegetables, putting them in the oven, adding some tofu. That'd be really good.
Mm-hmm.
Pop some pesto or something on top. I think the reason the marinade, so you had to mix the miso and the oil and everything else for the marinade, and then you had to make a dressing to go on top, which is like quite a lot of chopping and preparation. Whereas if you just say had like a pesto dressing that you just bought from the shop, then that would save you a lot of time. So, yeah. But overall, it was good, right?
Yeah, it was good.
Okay. John, why don't you explain how this episode is going to be different to previous ones?
Well, normally we do our 5 minutes on the food and then our 55 minutes on the books. But this time we've excised the books entirely. So we're not even going to say the word books until Rachel...
You've said it like twice already.
There might be a section on books later. Rachel is teasing that. So we will find out. But yeah, I mean, massive audience feedback has been we want more veganism. It's meant to be a 50-50 partnership. So we're compensating now with an ultra-vegan episode.
Yay.
Where I'm going to ask Rachel questions about the history, development and future of veganism worldwide.
Right.
And Rachel has put over, 45 minutes of preparation in.
Yeah, some serious hard work's gone into this.
She is equipped to deal with those questions and has at least promised me it's going to...
I think I said it was going to be good. Not necessarily the best episode yet. Only our listeners can be the judge of that, yeah. I think.
There'll be a poll on our Facebook group, so...
yeah.
Let's begin.
Yeah. Before we start, I think the reason that I had to put in this research is because I feel where my being a vegan comes from is not really where a lot of vegans come from. It's a slightly different place. So that is a disclaimer to any kind of staunch vegans who are listening.
Of which there are many. Mm-hmm. Okay, why did you become a vegan, remain a vegan, and will continue to be a vegan?
So I became a vegan off the back of being a vegetarian since I was 2.5. Where I decided to become a vegetarian off my own back, because I made a connection between the animals at the farm, like the chicken at the farm, and the chicken on the table that we were eating. Kind of jumping straight in here, there's a really interesting parallel between my experience and an experience recorded in the first ever kind of vegan magazine, which was initially called the Vegan News and then just became called the Vegan, what's the date of this? 1951, where they talk about exactly the same thing happening and saying, often when children of meat eaters born with a love of animals suddenly realise that the dinner on the plate before them is part of a little lamb that was frolicking about in the meadow a few weeks before, they are...
So I went through this phase, but unlike Rachel, I grew out of it.
...was coming from when they were...
I've actually prodded you onto it. Is she a vegan?
No, I mean, are a vegetarian.
Okay, all right. Okay, we'll come back to that. Okay, so my story...
yeah, your story!
...is, so I was, kind of 7, I said to my mum, I want to be a vegetarian. Didn't say vegan. And she said, fine, cook for yourself. And I was like, no, I don't want to do that. I want you to change, you know, what you do to accommodate me. And she said, no. And in one go, that's it. That was the end, because I didn't want to change my lifestyle, to accommodate my own beliefs. I expected the world to conform, like, you know, most vegans do. By stopping me, she instantly killed it.
Along with hundreds of other animals.
Yeah. Whereas you, when you were 2.5, up and your mum saying, okay, if you want it, you need to be self-sufficient in your beliefs because we don't share them. But I reckon your mum probably just switched to vegetarian food.
So I guess my mum respected me and my decisions. So When I made that decision when I was 2.5, there was a period where I would eat things which I didn't identify as meat, even though they weren't vegetarian. So I would eat like mince and stuff because I didn't understand that it was meat. But it's essentially, it was like a case, I think, of, you know, her being like, yeah, it's okay. Like, she didn't make everyone eat vegetarian. She just not give me meat. And as I got older, give me some protein and stuff to kind of make up for not having the meat. But it wasn't like she was always cooking like two separate meals or anything like that. So yeah, I think, I feel like if I had a child and they said to me when they were however old, you know, if I was raising them to eat meat and they said, oh, I want to be vegetarian, then of course that'd be fine. But equally, if I was raising them vegetarian and they said, I want to eat meat, I think I would give them meat. Because I think it's important to, like, yeah. But I think, like, the interesting thing is, like, yeah, you're arguing that at 7 you could have gone and cooked your own food.
Yeah, you could.
But, like, what would you...
In the old days, you'd be working in a factory at age 7.
Yeah, and, like, chopping off bits of your body parts on the machinery and dying by the age 12. Yeah, you did. So, like, I don't
know. No, I think you could. I mean, okay, you'd have to liaise with your mum. You'd have to be like, okay, fine, I will cook, but, I mean, you're probably going to have to buy this stuff for me.
Yeah, I think that's quite a big ask for a set, like, I know, I teach 7-year-olds. Well, a lot of them, you know, don't know the difference between their right and left, let alone...
Well, in that case, okay, then what your mum should have said is, okay, tell you what, I'm not changing anything. When you're older and able to cook for yourself, then you can choose what you eat. But if you're eating what I cook, it is my decision because the responsibility is mine because I'm the one who's choosing how to feed you.
I wonder what I would have done if she had done that, because I was really, like, passionate. Like, I didn't let things go. So I don't know what would have happened. You know, like, if I didn't want to eat something, I generally wouldn't have eaten it.
Yeah, but you would have broken down after about 3 days.
But the thing is, I wouldn't have been starving because, like, there would have still been all the other food. I just wouldn't have eaten the meat bit of it, which I think was basically what happened. Like, the vegetables, but I wouldn't have the meat. Which obviously, as we go on, the foundation of a healthy vegetarian or vegan diet, but it's still, if that's always when, you know, iron is, then they might decide that actually they probably could go and buy some corn sausages or something. Other brands of sausages are available, and kind of, yeah, make sure you have a balanced and healthy diet. So I think there's a way. And you know what, John, there's still hope for you. There's still time. I mean, you're eating one vegan meal.
Yeah. Okay. So let's start at the beginning. What's the history of vegetarianism?
Well, I haven't finished my history yet, to be honest with you.
Well, I thought you were done at age 2.5.
Well, no, because that was only vegetarian. Okay. I didn't understand, even though I did it from, like, a compassionate grounds, like, I thought it was kind of really wrong to kill animals and eat them. I didn't understand that the dairy industry or kind of poultry and, like, eggs, like, harmed the animals. And then once I tried to be vegan, and I think also culturally, like, it was more normal to be vegetarian than it was to be vegan. And I, like, remember saying to people, oh yeah, I'm vegetarian, but oh no, I'm not vegan, oh no, like, definitely not. And then a couple of years ago, it was definitely more kind of like social, and I was living in London, and yeah, I had, like, some conversations with people and thought I'd try being vegan. I tried it once a bit longer ago in university, and I was kind of, like, on and off. Like, I'd be vegan at home, but I wouldn't be vegan when I was eating out. But, yeah, then I changed to being vegan completely, and it's been very easy. And I think the reason it's been easy is because I now kind of don't want to eat dairy or eggs, because I never was that keen in the first bit. It made me feel a bit grim, like, eating stuff that came from an animal. But now I'm like, if I'm like, oh, I really fancy some cheese or whatever, I can, like, imagine the animal suffering. And that makes me not want to eat it. Basically, I can imagine the cow whatever. I think if I was standing by that cow, then I wouldn't want to, yeah, cause it any more suffering. That being said, I don't believe in converting people to veganism, and I don't think it's right for everyone, and I don't think it's inherently wrong to eat meat necessarily, and I think that's where I differ from a lot of other vegans, which we're going to discuss. Thoughts?
Yeah. Yeah, because I remember everyone used to be vegetarian, and then suddenly about 5 years ago, everyone switched to vegan.
Yeah, it's been a massive shift.
Because now, like, if someone's like, I'm a vegetarian, the first question is, like, why aren't you a vegan then? Whereas back in the day, vegans were, like, the kind of extreme people who took it too far.
Totally. That's but definitely how I viewed them.
Now it's, like, now, the thing is, now everyone's a vegan. It used to be, like, an edgy thing, but now, like, at least among young people in London, it's at least, like, one in four.
Do you think it's a fad, or do you think it's a shift?
No, I hope it passes. People get bored of it.
Why do you hope it passes?
Well, they're always going on about it all the time, aren't they?
So it's more attitude.
It's like a joke, isn't it, where if you meet a vegan, they'll have told you within, like, 12 seconds. Yeah, nah, it's just, I mean, I think they kind of big up a bit that all they do is eat plants. It's like, well, so what?
Well, what do you think they would respond?
Well, yeah, but it's like, well, does what you eat actually matter? So should it even come into conversation more than, like, once? Like, I don't talk about what I eat more than, like, once every week with someone, 2 weeks, 3 weeks. Whereas vegans, it's like, you know, 40 times a day they tell you about it.
I guess the thinking behind it is why that there is a massive injustice, firstly, going on. And if you're a vegan for environmental reasons, the idea that if you're eating meat that you're contributing to kind of like the demise of the planet, essentially, like, it's not about what you personally eat, it's about being part of a wider cause. And that's why there's that reputation of vegans talking about it all the time, because it's not that they're just really interested in what they eat, it's that it's like, this is a massive injustice that all these animals are being killed and it's unnecessary. Like, this idea that we're going to look back on this and be like, how could we have let all of this, now this is contentious, suffering, but obviously this is a really big debatable point about whether animals feel suffering in the same way that we can identify, but all this suffering go on without anyone kind of stepping in and saying this is wrong, you know, this is barbarian. Yeah, why they have the reputation for talking about it so much. Of course, there is, like, the kind of London cyclist, people who get up at 5 a.m. and do their Pilates or whatever, style of it as well, where it's like, oh yes, I'm a vegan, to kind of prove a point.
You can kind of tell, can't you, if someone's vegan before you talk to them.
Do I give off vegan vibes?
No, you don't.
I don't?
No, not really, sorry.
Wow!
Maybe you're not one of the crazy ones enough yet.
Yeah, still got a way to go.
You need dyed hair, maybe a nose piercing. Like, dyed hair, nose piercing.
That's so weird. I was considering doing both of those things, genuinely. One of my friends said that I should go for kind of light purple hair, yeah. So I was thinking about that. Yeah, and I actually look really good with a nose piercing.
Yeah, anyway, so those are the two big giveaways. For women, for men, it's just a beard.
A beard.
Like, no man, self-respecting man, has a beard. But once they're vegan, they suddenly...
Wow. Good job, Alex and Chris aren't here, isn't it?
Well, okay, so Chris is essentially a vegan.
He's not a vegan.
Anyway, we can't say names because we're doing that.
We've said their names loads on this podcast.
Also, they walked in at one point.
Yeah. That, like, Chris is definitely not a vegan.
Okay, fine, vegetarian.
Sorry, Chris,
same
we're
thing.
Not. It's not the same thing.
Well, it is, other than you eat one less egg a day.
Well, it depends what kind of vegetarian life you lead.
Okay, one less egg a week.
Or, like, cheese, milk... chocolate, cake. It's like quite a big difference.
Okay. Anyway, your point we'll return to, but we needed to start from the beginning. So what's the history of veganism?
Okay, what's the history of veganism? Well, it depends what you mean by that. So there's kind of like, there's been a few articles where it's like, oh, you know, actually our prehistoric ancestors, which is wrong in my opinion, they might have eaten a mainly plant-based diet because it was really hard to catch meat, essentially, and to prepare it. But they weren't vegan from a moral standpoint, obviously. I think it's interesting to know that, though, because then when people put forward the arguments of, well, it's natural to eat meat, and when people talk about, like, these paleo diets, which include meats, but everything's raw, and they don't have certain types of grain and stuff like that, well, it's not, you know, it's not based in fact. Like, it definitely wasn't the case. Yeah, we basically ate plant-based diets for a really long time. When people did eat meat, especially a bit later on, it was like for like ceremonial purposes, so like a big feast day or something, that would be the only time they'd eat meat. So I think that's really interesting. It's like very different to now, as it wasn't like meat was a regular thing, it was an exception.
Well, it depends how rich you were.
But I'm talking like rather than...
Well, no, I mean, if they could kill it, they ate it. But yeah, it was like where they killed it. Yeah, you're right. It was part of like a ceremony.
Yeah. So I think that I don't think this is necessarily correct, but I think the kind of boom in veganism in the 20th and 21st century is a response to eating meat so regularly. It's a response to the scale that the meat industry is at rather than a big thing. If meat was something that was there very occasionally and there wasn't a massive meat industry, I don't think that people would be so against it. Some people would, but I don't think it would be so common. Because that's a big argument you hear is like, maybe not off lots of vegans, but from vegetarians, from some vegans, like that it's the meat industry. It's, for me, definitely, I'm not morally opposed to eating free-range eggs that come from, you know, the farm down the road where I know the person and I can see how the chickens are kept and it's on a very small scale, but I am opposed to chickens being kept in horrible conditions. So, which is, again, a view not shared by a lot of vegans, which we'll get onto a bit later.
Okay, so Paleolithic times, they're eating meat. I mean, so the thing is, though, if they had more options, they would have eaten it.
Yeah, so it's not moral at all.
So, yeah, no, I think you're right. I don't think really either side works appealing to cavemen,
no,
which they both do. Okay, but okay. What happens when it's being...
So, we are talking really about, I think, the first recorded instance of a vegan / vegetarian diet, because it's kind of hard to tell between the two, especially in the context in which they're kind of presented, is between in the Indus Valley civilization. So that's 3000 to 1000 BC. So the people who lived, it's kind of like the northern part of South Asia, at that time, it wasn't a vegetarian civilization. People didn't eat meat. Now, I'm not sure why that was the case, but definitely a few years later, so when Hinduism and Jainism started kind of developing in that area, there was this idea of ahimsa, which is still a massive thing, like a really, really central teaching in Hinduism, Buddhism and Jainism today, which is the idea you should not have any violence towards any living, which obviously led to some people not killing animals. John, what do you think the issues might be?
Well, what if it's a tree?
Right. Yeah, exactly. So this differs. Some of the teachings in Hinduism are a bit like, well, you know, it's unavoidable sometimes. If we can eat plants, don't worry about that. If we're killing something, if it's for a sacrifice to the gods, then yeah, that's probably okay. And then some of them are like, no, it's not okay. But there's kind of this debate going on. Meanwhile, in like Buddhism, I mean, you've kind of probably come across that, especially with, like, Buddhist monks and stuff, being completely vegetarian. Yeah? But in Jainism, which is something I didn't know until like a couple of years ago, that they are really serious about it. So the whole idea of not killing any living form takes them to sweep, this is like the monks and the nuns more than, I mean, it depends how like devout you are, but sweep away the path in front of you so you don't kill any bugs on the path. It means that you need to cause the least harm as possible when you are eating plants. So they won't eat like root vegetables or onions or garlic and things like that. Because they're killing the whole plant, because life could come from that plant. Whereas if you're eating a berry off a tree or something, then, you know, the tree still survives. So it's causing the least harm as possible. Interestingly, though, they're not actually vegan in the kind of Western modern term of it, because they'll eat dairy, because if the cow isn't suffering, which it wasn't when these kind of beliefs first came, then what's the problem? So it kind of comes from a different place. So that's like one strand of it. But they like, Jainism still does that. So if you go to like an Indian restaurant that kind of serves like food and they like are Jains, then they won't have food with onion and garlic in it.
We ate garlic today, didn't we?
Well, yeah, maybe. I'm not a Jain, so that's probably why.
Well, that's the next step for the...
Well, no, because I don't believe that onions and garlic have feelings. Like, they don't believe that they have feelings, but I don't with killing them. There's a poem, I think by Roger McGough, is that how you say his name? That's, like, talking about, oh, nasty vegetarians killing all these poor plants, like, with all their feelings, plants crying out, how dare you, type thing. Which I always made me feel a bit sad, actually. But, yeah, no, I haven't gone that far. So, yeah, that's one side of it. Do you want to know some other, some fun people who were vegetarians in the past, who were vegans in the past? Okay. Let's start with this emperor. He was an Indian emperor.
Ashoka.
Yeah? Mm-hmm. How do you know?
Tell me. I'm actually very intelligent.
Oh, my God. Tell me about what you know about Ashoka. He's got a great name.
Yeah. Ashoka. What do I know? Well, he was one of the early Buddhist kings who spread Buddhism to
Eve. Yes.
The reason we know about him is when he did all his good things, he made them carve it in stones. So India's scattered with these stones that say all the good things he did. But yeah, he's held up as an example of someone applying ethics to government instead of, you know, treating the two separately.
Do you know how he became a Buddhist? What happened?
I did once.
Okay. Well, you're going to know again now.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really interesting, and this is a theme that reoccurs with people who become vegan or vegetarian. So he was involved in a big war. He was leading in a big war, the Kalinga War, and his army basically won and killed a load of people. So there was like, I'm not sure like the figures, but there was like bloodshed on a massive scale. And the story goes that that was what converted him to Buddhism afterwards. So he saw everything that was going on and then decided to make that change. And part of his new beliefs was not causing suffering to animals as well as people. So the kind of, I guess, the guilt from, he felt responsible for what happened in the war. So then, yeah, he decided to leave this peaceful life and became a kind of proponent of that, one of the early people who were leading not through killing people, but through trying to kind of do things peacefully.
Who else have you got?
I've got some people from ancient Greece. It was quite a big thing in ancient Greece as well. So Pythagoras believed that all animals have immortal souls. I guess comparing them kind of to humans. So he didn't like eating meat. You've got, I'm not sure how you say this, Plotinus.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, another, he's a Greek philosopher, and he wouldn't eat meat. He wouldn't eat medicines made from animals, which is nice because it has like that parallel to obviously all the protests and stuff against animal testing today. And he was saying, no, even with medicines, we shouldn't have them made out of animals. Because they're just as important. So I think that's interesting, like, that even though veganism is such a thing now, it's not just weirdos who have been doing it in the past.
Well, one of the big... I'm vegetarian.
Who was that?
I don't know. Do you mind if there's typing noises on the podcast?
Yeah, I do. And my massive ears, yeah.
I think he was called Milo.
Milo?
Yeah, let's see. Milo. Look at me. He might not be.
Milo the vegetarian. That's interesting, isn't it? Because Milo, the hot chocolate malty drink, I don't suppose is actually vegan, is it? I think it's got powdered milk in it. That's good. Got anything?
Well, I've got his Wikipedia page, but as of yet, it has not mentioned him being vegan.
It's not a subheading on diet.
He saved Pythagoras' life when a pillar collapsed in a banquet hall and he had to support the roof.
Wow.
Although, as of yet...
Maybe he saved Pythagoras' life and Pythagoras was like, thank you so much, now do me one last favour, Milo. You've already stopped my suffering, why don't you stop the suffering of many, many more creatures with immortal souls? And Milo was like, yeah, okay, wonderful, I love feeling like the hero. And Pythagoras was like, okay, become. Now, we wouldn't have said vegan, because that term didn't exist then, but... become a non-meat eater.
Okay, I've got a source here that said he used to eat 20 pounds of meat a day.
Well, maybe that was before the whole saving Pythagoras' life incident.
Definitely one of them who was famously...
I'm going for that. I'm going for when he met Pythagoras. That was what changed everything. Anyway, well, why don't you get back to us on that, Dylan?
No.
Because I think this might be slightly tedious for our listeners to listen to you go through every single... Greek Olympian.
It doesn't work, so when you type it in, it brings up more than once.
Okay. No worries then. Should we move on?
No.
Yes.
Hang on, I'm on the just Encyclopedia Britannica. Blimmin. Okay, go on then. You start talking about your next.
No, you need to be listening, or it would just be another 10 minutes of me talking and you sitting in silence.
It's okay, the listeners are listening.
Can you just ask them questions?
Okay, well, someone. No.
Well, I mean, at least two people were. I think there were.
Oh, actually, I've got another point.
Okay, go on then.
Someone, can't remember who, and might have been Alexander the Great, at the time, kind of Eastern ideas of reincarnation were fashionable.
Yeah.
And he heard someone beating a dog, and he thought he heard in the dog's cries the sound of his friend who had died.
Oh, God.
So he stopped him beating the dog.
There are a few stories like this. What is the king who was, it was an English king. Make sure you're listening to me.
Mm-hmm.
No, you're not listening.
Yes, I am listening. You're talking about an English king.
An English king who was really, killed a load of people in battle. And then he came across, like, a deer or bird or something that was kind of being shot but not killed. And he, like, couldn't bear it and had to get someone else to shoot it out of mercy. And there's all this idea of when people actually see suffering firsthand or when they see it with it. But when there's a level of distance to it, then they can. Did you get any of that? Or were you Googling Olympians who are vegetarian?
No, I was trying to find this guy who saw his dog being beaten.
Oh, my God.
He's just putting up videos of people beating dogs.
Let's take the phone away. Because this is really boring.
No, it's not.
I had a really good point there, John. And you were just like, Googling away.
Your point was that there was an English king who, it was Pythagoras.
Oh, okay, like I already said. Good, yeah, right, glad you clarified that then.
Get that.
What, he was Olympian?
No, this is not the Olympian, this is Pythagoras. Well, you weren't listening to me.
Someone's
beating
the
dog.
He was the dog person, and he thought he heard his friends crying, the dogs crying. And
yeah, anyways, that's why he went into veganism.
Well...
Good. Right.
Even that then, it's all this, isn't it? It's like as soon as someone sees the suffering or the pain firsthand, then it kind of turns them off. So before it was just a concept, but then once they've actually seen it, they're like, oh no, actually this is wrong. Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Cool. Should we move on?
No. Who else do you have?
Well, that's it for my kind of ancients. Kind of move on quite a long way. I'm going now to what, 18th century with Jeremy Bentham?
Mm-hmm.
18th?
Yeah.
Yeah. And he's, this whole Eastern kind of type of veganism, I feel like with the West, doesn't have a kind of like a significant impact on the development of veganism in the West. So this, the kind of ancient Greece stuff kind of, I feel like, gets put in a, not really developed that much for a while. People talk about it, people write about it, but it doesn't seem to really develop into impact on eating habits. All the Eastern stuff carries on. So like Buddhists, some, you know, Hindus, like Jainism, some types of like Taoism keep going with the vegetarian diets all the way through. But then in the West, we have Jeremy Bentham, who's like, oh, I think maybe, or questions, do animals feel suffering in the way that humans feel suffering? So it doesn't matter that animals don't have a sense of kind of self-awareness or a sense of morality like we do. All that matters is that they suffer. And if they suffer, then we shouldn't be causing them to suffer. Which is very, very similar to the kind of ethical veganism, kind of what I thought when I was 2.5. I don't want to cause suffering to any animal. Kind of, I guess, what you thought when you were 7.
Yeah, I can't remember now.
Yeah.
I think I was just being difficult.
Were you? I think it was just a bit of a protest.
Yeah.
Did you know what the term vegetarian was? Were you, like, aware of it, or was it, like, I just don't want to eat meat?
No, I knew what vegetarian was. Okay,
yeah, so I think that's, like, a big difference, because, like, I didn't know what vegetarian was. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, it's more, you can be difficult if you're like, oh, I've heard this term vegetarian, and it'll mean that my mum has to cook me a separate meal, rather than, like, I can't bear to eat anything dead anymore. I don't know. So, yeah, he kind of, like, came up with this. So, this idea that maybe morally it's not right to cause animal suffering, which obviously leads into the whole veganism thing. What are your thoughts? Do you think animals feel suffering? Because it's a big point of debate.
No, suffering. I think they do. I don't think that matters.
You think they do, but you don't think it matters?
No. So the question of a debate. So there is a debate that they don't feel suffering, in which case you can do what you want.
Well, it's like, no, they feel pain. They obviously feel pain.
But the suffering argument.
Mm.
So the suffering argument is twofold. So there's one argument where they don't feel suffering, in which case the whole veganism falls
down. When you say suffering, though, do you mean pain, or do you mean a kind of existential suffering?
Like, it doesn't matter.
Well, it does, because there's one thing, like, for example, if you inject a sheep painlessly, and then it doesn't know what's going on anymore, and it lived a nice life before that, is it wrong to kill and eat it?
Well, hang on, I don't know. But the point is, right, there's two things. So, like, lobsters being burnt alive, boiled alive.
Yeah.
The Norwegian government, because they boil loads of stuff in Norway, so the Norwegian government decided where to legislate it. Mm. And then the scientists actually said they have so few neurons in their brains, it's like, I don't know, 100 million from what a human has,
yeah,
that actually they don't feel suffering.
Okay.
With, like, the mammals, really, just because their brains are similar enough for... It kind of works.
I'm still not sure about this. I'm not sure about whether suffering is the right term for it, or whether pain. Do you don't really? Because if you minimize pain, then is there anything left? Maybe I'm not really talking about suffering. Maybe I'm talking about, is it still wrong if they don't feel pain to kill and eat them? Because obviously with a human, you know, if you were to inject a human painlessly, it would still be wrong to kill them, even if they didn't feel the pain, right?
Mm-hmm.
But with an animal, it's kind of, for me, that would still be wrong. Even if they didn't feel pain, it would still be wrong to kill and eat them.
Okay.
But in that case, I feel like that's what Bentham was not saying. I feel like he was saying, if they feel the pain, then we shouldn't cause them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. But then I don't think suffering is the right word. Because, yeah. I mean, so a lot of the vegan debate, I think, is irrelevant, because they're talking about how can the answer is, well, hang on, if it's a free-range cow, is absolutely as happy as it would be in the wild, and then is killed instantly with a bolt to the head.
Well, I hear it goes with, like, a lot of... this idea, this is a kind of a separate issue. Free-range cows are living this lovely life, and they don't know that they don't feel suffering is kind of wrong, because they may live in a field that... What counts as free-range isn't that free always. It just means that they get a bit of, like... daylight. It doesn't mean that they're happy roaming, frolicking around fields. But also, being free range doesn't impact on the way they're killed. So even if they've had a free range upbringing, as it were, they can still be packed really tight into the van or whatever that they get taken off to be killed. They can still be kept in the slaughterhouse in really horrible conditions. So a lot of where the vegan activism comes from is not while they're on the farm, it comes from when they're being taken to the slaughterhouse, because that, they say, is like, that's still causing them suffering. They're still obviously like really, really scared. If animals can be scared, displaying things that we interpret as being scared, where they're kind of in the truck when they're being taken to... yeah, to the slaughterhouse. So, yeah. I think a big reason why lots of people don't eat meat, not necessarily vegans, but a lot, is because they know that even free-range animals do feel suffering. Maybe not as prolonged. I mean, definitely not as prolonged as those kept in factory conditions, but still, they do.
Okay, so if they were shot in the field without knowing it, then it wouldn't be a problem.
Well, it wouldn't be a problem to some people. It wouldn't be a problem to Jeremy Bentham. It would be to me, but...
Yeah, okay. But a lot of the vegan arguments are more about conditions, which could be entirely avoided, in which case
it's not really about... I'd say it's more of a vegetarian thing. And maybe now the conditions of dairy and, egg farming and stuff have become more public. Maybe more vegetarians are not eating those. But I will get on maybe now to veganism and why this is kind of different.
Okay.
Because there's like a really significant difference that I feel. So obviously all these people eating vegetarian / basically vegan diets for a really long time. But in the West, the term vegan only came into use in 1944. It was someone in England who was part of the Vegetarian Society. Interestingly, linking back to what was our Indian emperor called Ashoka. Mm-hmm. Yeah. He was a pacifist, so he didn't fight in World War II. He also, and this links into a lot of the kind of clean eating things which happen now, abstained from any kind of toxins. So he didn't drink alcohol. He didn't smoke, and he also didn't eat meat, or fish, or dairy, or eggs. And he coined the term vegan. Do you want to guess?
Well, I mean, it must be vegetable.
So he was part of the vegetarian. No. Vegetable and person. Not really, because it's not vegan.
Closer, isn't it?
Yeah.
Go on, then.
But anyway, he's part of the Vegetarian Society.
Uh-huh.
And he called veganism, or being a vegan, the beginning and the end to vegetarianism. So what's... He took the beginning of vegetarian and the end of vegetarian and stuck it together. But it was actually only meant to be a kind of a temporary term. So he did his first newsletter as kind of like a splinter group from the Vegetarian Society in the UK, and said, okay, we're going to call it the Vegan News. And like typed it all out. It looks very nice. This is in 1944. And he said, can you come up with some better names? Do you want to suggest some other names that vegans could be called? Guess what his kind of society came back to him with.
What other names for vegetarians? I don't know.
Other names for vegans.
Are they stupid? Are they things like planties or...
Not planties, no, but you're not that far away. So this is readers of the Vegan News that came back to me in 1944 with suggestions.
Go on, in most.
Go on, planties. You can come up with some more than that.
Okay. I mean, they must be based around the words vegetables or plants or fruit or...
Some of them are, some of them aren't.
Go on then.
No, come on, you may have one guess.
I don't have any more.
Oh yeah, planties. What else? We've had vegetarians and he's trying to splinter away from the vegetarians, trying to do something different, trying to improve on them maybe even.
I don't know. Go on.
Oh, Johnny, you've let me down. Okay, so here are some of the suggestions. One was neo-vegetarian. Yeah, I know. What would you give that out of 10?
2. 2,
okay. All vegan.
All vegan.
All vegan. Yeah, and so like all
vegetables.
What would you give that?
I don't know. That's all right. I can have a 7.
A 7? Okay.
That sounds like a modern word.
All vegan, yeah.
You know, they invent words for the newest fad.
Yeah, like
all vegan.
Like a brand of plant based.
Yeah, I mean, neo vegetarian could also be a new fad.
Neo vegetarian, it sounds a bit too much like a political movement, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't like neo as a. Yeah. Okay, here's some more. Dairy ban.
Dairy ban?
Yeah.
As in banned dairy?
Yeah, dairy ban.
What about all the other stuff? So their entire movement of not eating any animal products, they're going
to
eat entirely
comes down to 2. What did you get out of 10?
0, because it doesn't work and it's stupid.
Well, I don't know what you think of this one then. Vitan.
Where does that come from?
Your guess is as good as mine. Something to do with vitality? Living? Well, promoting life? It's actually quite clever if you think of it like that. Like vitality, vital. Vitan. And it also sounds like Titan.
Okay, no, that doesn't work, so 0.
Oh, I'd give that a strong 6.
That's even worse than whatever the first ones were.
Okay, well, you're really not going to like the next ones then. Benivore.
Okay, what does Ben mean?
Bene, is that like good or something?
Oh, as in benevolent eaters, benivore.
Yes.
Yeah, okay, fine. That's all right, they can have 7.
Oh, strong, okay. I don't know about this one though. Sanivores. Like sunny, like what is that about?
No, I assume they mean san as in without
meat. Ah, I was thinking like sanitation. I was like, what the hell?
Well, they might be. I mean, I can't speak for these people, but I don't know. I assume it's san as in without meat.
Okay, and here's my personal favorite.
How's it spelled? S-A-N.
I.
Now these are good. This is fun because now they can do this competition because vegan just is everything. Isn't
it? Exactly. Okay, here's the last one.
This is your favorite.
My favorite. Okay, wait for it. I'm gonna get my best French accent. Beau manger.
As in good eaters.
Yeah. It just sounds so classy though, doesn't it? Beau manger. I might like start up a chain of kind of like vegan eateries called Beau manger. Play prep at their own game.
Okay.
Well, alright.
Cool.
So yeah, the vegan news swiftly became the vegan in, I think, 1946. And that was like, it was so interesting when I was reading through these today, actually. It was like a proper little community. It had lists of all the products that were available in the shops, which were vegan. So like someone did investigations and were like, no, none of Cadbury's products are vegan, but some boiled sweets are, and Colgate toothpastes and things like that. They had recipes. They had like real life experiences, how I became a vegan. They had events. They had opera trips for vegans. They had like hill walking for vegans. They advertised jobs for vegans. It was so cool. Such a big thing. Now the Vegan Society is a really, really big deal now. It's like a really big organization. But back in the 1940s, it was like this nice little kind of community of people who had these beliefs that no one else had. So yeah. Do you want to know about Donald Watson, our founder? Yeah. So he lived for a really long time. He was born on my birthday, 2nd of September. So we have a connection in 1910, and he lived until 2005. So he was 95. So being a vegan obviously worked for him. The big difference then between the stuff of the past, the kind of Eastern philosophy of what Bentham was saying, of what a lot of vegetarians saying, is that vegans think that you shouldn't exploit animals, that you shouldn't use animals as labour, which is like the main change. So that means that it's not just about suffering, it's that you shouldn't make them kind of work for you. You shouldn't use them for human gain. Thoughts on that?
Nah, may as well.
May as well. Yeah, I mean, obviously,
there's questions. So some of it's like they start talking about mistreatment. So you need to, I think when you talk about it, you need to start with the assumption that you have a world where you don't cause unnecessary suffering. So people are like, well, what if you have a horse and beat it? But don't worry about that. So imagine that there's no... Imagine every time you eat an animal, you know for sure it was killed painlessly and unexpectedly, and every time an animal's used, it's being used in a fine way.
So in which case, yeah.
I think once you start with that, I mean, I don't see any problem.
I think vegans, some vegans anyway, vegan society fundamentally disagrees. So it's like, even if a horse was being kept really well, you still shouldn't use it to draw a carriage. Even if you're keeping bees in the best and wonderful conditions, they still shouldn't be making honey for you. That isn't what I think.
Do you eat honey?
I do.
I've been a vegan.
It's a point of debate, actually.
Well, it isn't, because you're using an animal product.
Well, again, it's like something that the vegan society say, but like lots of people who call themselves vegan kind of do eat honey, do wear silk. I've read stuff more recently about actually that making honey does cause a load of bees to die, the same way that making silk kills silkworms often, the way that it is made. Again, this is the idea of practicality, and it's the fact that the mechanism of doing it that kills them. So I'm a bit off honey at the minute, but yeah, morally, I'm not opposed to eating eggs if the chickens were kept in lovely conditions. Morally, I'm not opposed to drinking cow's milk if the cows were kept in lovely conditions. It's just that is basically impossible to come by at the minute, unless you live on a farm and you're doing it yourself or you're watching someone do it. So I think that's my sticking point with it, which I know is not properly vegan. Interestingly, it was only in 1960 with American Vegan Society that they ever started talking back to the fact that people in the East had been vegan for ages or hadn't been eating meat or dairy and causing suffering for ages, for thousands of years. And it wasn't kind of picked up on until then. So yeah, that is veganism.
There's different reasons though, isn't it?
Yeah.
So if you took out reincarnation, the Jains would do it because they thought of...
Well, I mean, yeah. But I think that, I mean, there's lots of different reasons, ground reasons, at the root why people are vegan in the West. It might be because they think you can have all sorts of beliefs. So even though reincarnation is the kind of maybe part of it, I think fundamentally believing that you shouldn't cause suffering, it's more of a general thing, whatever the ground root. But yeah.
What about, you're not that crazy, are you? But what about the pet debate? Aren't there, so the hardline vegans are if you can't use the horse for riding, you can't have a dog.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of, maybe it's logical conclusion, isn't it? I'm on like some vegan Facebook groups and stuff. I don't really see that argument very often. That rarely comes up.
Difficult to see any difference. Oh, well, you're a suffering one. I mean, you're not causing them suffering, but if you accept that, you can have a farm where there's no suffering if you were supervising it, then...
Well, I mean, you say you can have a farm where there's no suffering. I'm not just talking about suffering. I'm talking about killing. So if there was a farm where there was killing, then I wouldn't agree with it. If there is a farm where they're taking eggs and milk, but it's not disadvantaging the animals in any way... It's not contributing to their premature death, then I would be fine with it. So as long as it's not causing suffering, and as long as it's not, you know, hurting or killing them in a way that might not be causing them pain, but it's still happening. Yeah, so like, that's kind of, I think, where I stand on it. But lots of vegans, yeah, would be like, meh. Anything where you're using an animal, it's wrong, which is where the pet thing comes from. And a partnership, maybe?
Yeah, it's not very popular, the getting rid of pets movement.
No, it's really not. You know, also it's the thing of like, well, you're giving them a better life than they would be having
animals. Okay, well, hang on, this is my next point.
Okay.
So without farming, the animals wouldn't exist in the first place, would they? So there'd be absolutely, so there's not a single wild cow in the country.
No, that's definitely not.
So there would be no cows. There are wild boars, not very many. There's no wild chickens in Britain because they're a foreign species. What else we got? No wild horse. Well, there's a few wild horses.
Yeah, there are some wild
horses. Okay, so all the animals wouldn't exist.
Yeah. I think it's when we get down to, like, the practical steps forward, if everyone was to become vegan tomorrow, what would happen? But obviously, things change over time. So a gradual reduction, which is what seems to be happening now in people eating meat, in people consuming dairy, a gradual shrinking of agriculture, animal-based agriculture, might lead to, in the end, there being very few animals kept for farming and we wouldn't see as many. That doesn't mean that you're slaughtering loads of sheep to get rid of them immediately. It just means that, well, you're not encouraging breeding in the same way. You're kind of shrinking the size of your livestock. Which I guess is, if loads of people were to become vegan, that would be the way it goes. And yeah, probably the countryside would look really different. But I think the whole idea that the British countryside is some kind of pastoral idyll is covering up for the kind of stuff that goes on. And yeah, if we're looking at fields of sheep and going, oh, how adorable, what we're saying is, how adorable are all these going to be eating them soon? So I find that pretty fucked up, really.
Okay, but the question
but is, I am the kind of person who walks past a field of pigs and starts crying, so, like, okay. Yeah.
So the what vegans say is you wouldn't want to be killed and eaten, which is fair enough.
Yeah.
But the question is, would you rather, so you, that's what you were saying earlier, but they have premature deaths.
Yeah.
So would you rather never exist at all, which is what you're saying to the animals, if everyone went vegans, they wouldn't exist, or would you rather have the existence knowing that you would eventually be killed prematurely?
That's such a flawed argument, though, because on that argument we should all be producing children as quickly as possible, because we're, each time we are not using one of our eggs, we're denying. That's the same argument, what's which is obviously that? Like, not true. Well, because if a life doesn't exist yet, you're not, there's nothing there. You're only imagining that from your perspective of a living being. But if you are literally nothing, you are not doing any harm.
Okay. So it's better that all the animals never live and they live and have a painless death, which they don't even know about.
Yeah. Like, I think that, you know, species change, the use of species changes. You know, people might decide that they want a pet cow in their field, fine. But I think the difference between, you know, a dying out and a shrinking of a population, especially when they are kind of artificially grown, is quite significant. Like, I don't think anyone's saying let's make sheep extinct.
But it would happen.
I don't think it would also, because you need them for, like, wool and stuff.
No, Rachel. Vegans are not having wool. No.
Well, yeah, I mean, who knows? I don't think it's, like, necessarily the worst thing in the world. I feel like conservation, you very much could.
You keep some in zoos. Oh, you can't have zoos.
Yeah.
But
if you think about the history of the world and all the species that have died out, especially if it's not done in a painful way, it's not done because suddenly their environment makes it so hard to live in, then, like, I personally think that's much more preferable to the current situation we have, which is so many millions of animals living in horrific conditions for their entire lives and then dying. Which is, like, the reality. I think your suggestion of, oh, but what if they all had lovely lives? For them all to have lovely lives, we would need so much more space, so many more resources, that we couldn't have the meat industry on the scale we have today, because the earth doesn't have enough resources, which brings you onto, like, the whole environmental veganism, that it just is so energy heavy to feed and kill an animal compared to plants. So not only from a kind of ethical standpoint, but also it's just not sustainable to eat meat on the scale that we're eating it.
Okay, all right. Well, how long are we going to do this episode for? Hours? Okay, so the next one's environmental. So this is what I read earlier, so I'm going to talk to it. Is that an entire year of veganism would be undone by one 11-hour flight.
I've no idea if that's true.
One person.
Well, I guess carbon is only one part of the thing. Flights are really bad. I think that's a really important thing, actually, that you get onto. Like, then this is a big issue I have, I think, with... Yeah, it's hard, because on a moral grounds, I do think it is so wrong that anyone can be okay with killing an animal. You wouldn't go around and shoot a dog and eat it. So why are you okay with someone else killing an animal for you to eat? Is my kind of basic standpoint on it. However, having said that, I know that there are lots of people who cannot be vegetarian or vegan for very, very good reasons. And as a person, I think you do come first. I think people do come first. And if that's going to mess you up by not eating meat, then, you know, by eating meat, then eat meat. So, yeah, you can make your life better in other ways. You can make sure you turn off the lights when you leave the house. You can not take 11-hour flights if you can help it. You can not drive everywhere. Like, there are so many other ways that you can live a sustainable life. So that's why, for me, I think because of the scale that we eat meat, that's why the veganism argument is so strong on environmental, because it's not about a one-to-one, because not everyone in the world is taking 11-hour flights. But a lot of people are eating meat, so if everyone stopped eating meat, that would make a massive difference. So I think that's why it doesn't map one-to-one in that way.
But surely the whole point of being a vegan is you're doing it because you're just one. So what lots of people say is there's no point because one person doesn't make a difference, which I think is true.
Yeah, I think that is true, but I think that it's got to start somewhere, like everything. There are lots of things which now we don't do that if someone hadn't said at some point in time, actually, we probably shouldn't be doing this, then it never would have changed. I guess that's the kind of foundation of all types of activism, isn't it?
Okay. But on the individual level, it's pointless.
Well, in the sense, it depends how you measure point, I think. If you measure it in terms of your well-being, your ability to reconcile your actions with what your beliefs are, then it has a massive point. It does for me. In terms of global impact on the earth, one person being a vegan isn't going to make any difference. But that doesn't mean that the social impact of one plus another one plus another one plus another one plus groups plus restaurants catered for veganism plus everything that comes with it isn't going to make it. So, yeah, that's environmental veganism. Are you converted yet, John?
No.
Aww.
Okay, are we done or should we...
I think I'm done. I think an hour of vegan preaching is probably enough.
Yeah, okay. I don't know. I mean, there is a question whether if you're completely designing from the ground up, you need to feed 7 billion people, you might sneakily put in that they're vegans.
Sneakily, or you might make that kind of one of the grounding principles of the infrastructure.
Yeah, I mean, but currently, what are you going to do? What are you going to do with all the farmland? Because a lot of the farmland is now being pasture for 2,000 years. Mm. So if it's only okay forest, what you're actually doing is the whole ecosystem is actually based around the fact that there's grazing animals. So if you got rid of the grazing animals, unless you kept them as environmental stewards,
yeah,
you'll actually then be... I mean, for most of the country, you'd be massively changing the whole ecosystem.
I mean, again, it comes down to which type of vegan you're arguing with. And I think when it's a moral thing and an ethical thing, it's all the practicalities almost come secondary to that. In that if you need to have some animals still grazing that land in order to stop the death of lots of other animals by radical changes to the ecosystem, then fine. We've got to preserve, you know, we do lots of things to preserve ecosystems currently. From my perspective, I'm more to the, well, you know, we could still have sheep, we can use wool. If it's not causing them any harm, then fine. You know, like, more kind of, maybe slightly pragmatic ways. But, yeah, I just think about the, if you think about the drastic changes that have undergone, you know, our landscape, the way that we eat, the way that everything works in the world, the way that where labour comes from, how every, you know, there's gone so much change in the past 300 years with agricultural and then industrial revolutions and then technology. I don't think eating meat is the biggest change, or not eating meat is going to be the biggest change that has really occurred over the past few years.
Maybe we should flag that. What about, quickly, like, the new lab-grown meat?
Yeah, fine, in my opinion. I would eat it myself, but...
What about if you had an animal, but you took its brain out when it was born, so you knew it had no mental capacity?
Well, this is just, like, the pain argument, isn't it?
Yeah.
I personally am not okay with that, because I'm a bit similar to, like, you would never do that to a human. It seems so unnecessary. I think that's it. It's the unnecessariness of it. You know, you can survive and you can eat fulfilling food and do everything without meat. And for me, having a taste for meat, and this is on a personal level, having a taste for meat, wanting to taste dead stuff, I don't get it.
Well, so that's my thing with veganism, is you go into a vegan shop and it's all imitation egg, imitation milk, imitation thing. Yeah. It's like if you said you're against hunting, but then you spent loads of money building robot deer to shoot. Like, they're spending so much time and effort. Well, about
video games, isn't it?
Really? Trying to spend so much time and effort pretending they're eating meat. And it's like, well, hang on, if your whole thing is eating meat's wrong, why are you so desperate to replicate it? But I guess,
so for some people, it isn't an emotional thing. So for me, it is really an emotional thing, and I'm put off and disgusted by the taste of meat. But for some people, they make the decision to be vegan, but that emotional thing isn't there. It's just a kind of a brain thing. So they still do want meat. They still do want the taste of dairy. I still want the taste of dairy a bit. You know, I eat kind of vegan cheese and vegan milk and stuff. But, you know, I guess if you're used to eating something, used to eating meat all your life, you're going to miss it. But lots of things that are not good to eat taste lovely. That doesn't mean that you should carry on eating them. So, you know, yeah. Right.
Okay.
I think we're done.
We've covered everything.
Are you sure you're not converted?
No.
Well, you can have a think.
Hang on, should we wrap up?
Let our listeners know.
Okay, so it depends whether you think it's better to live a bit and die or not live.
I pity your future wife, John.
There's no point being vegan, because once you've got on a plane, it's over.
I think I've kind of counteracted both of those things, really. But if that's what you want to take away from this, you can.
Okay. Well, do you think we changed any of the listeners' lives?
I don't know. Probably not.
No.
Yeah, it might be interesting.
Enough to.
I get put off by, you know, really strong...
Yeah, I mean, that's what I just against vegans the most, but that's what annoys people, I think, is that they're going on at people for eating what they want when their whole philosophy is on themselves eating what they want, so...
Yeah, this doesn't really... Again, kind of recapping the same, but, you know, if you believe something is wrong... You're going to, and no one else can see that it's wrong. You're going to want to convert.
Yeah. Mm. Right. Yeah, okay. What's next the episode on?
Word, people.
We're back to books. We're back to 5-minute veganism. 55 minutes books. Next episode.
Yay.
Hang on. You made about again. I thought you said you might mention books.
Well, just the magazine, really.
Okay.
Sorry.
Next episode.
It's going to be a surprise, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, we have a thing. Let us know if you want to come to our dinner party. Woo.
There won't be enough time because you've got six episodes to read it.
Yeah, good luck with that, John.
But well done on the editing for this one, Rachel. Oh, also, look forward to a song at the end because this is an unexpected
John's going to be making his vocal debut. Can't wait. Bye! Leaves, leaves, leaves. Leaves, leaves, leaves. They're found in books, they grow on plants and trees. Welcome to our podcast, Leaves.
Okay, that's good. Let's listen to that back. Do you want to do the bottle?
No, let's just have a listen.
Leaves, leaves, leaves. Leaves, leaves, leaves. They're found in books, they grow on plants and trees. Welcome to our podcast, Leaves.